Hello and welcome back to Cresta in the Afternoon. I'm Pat Odie Murray. I'm setting in for Al Cresta today. Al's attending to the Ave Maria Spring Membership Drive. So please continue to support your local EWTN Catholic radio stations. And I'm excited. This is someone I get to talk to again. Auguste Mayrot. He is the senior editor for the Everyman Commentary. He's an English teacher in Dallas, and he also writes for The Federalist, The American Thinker, and other publications. And we encourage you to go to his website, everymancommentary.com. Welcome, Auguste.
Welcome, Pat. Always a pleasure.
It's great to hear from you again. And this was an interesting article. I'm going to let the audience know. For Elon Musk and his disciples, Mars is heaven. This is a very interesting article. And I think I've heard Elon Musk mentioned so much in conversations across the board with all different kinds of people. So when this article came up, I thought, ooh, this is a good one. I got to read it. Now, you're kind of taking off on the biography, right, that was written on Musk by Walter Isaacson?
Yeah.
Okay. So tell me a little bit, why did you kind of read that biography, and what kind of moved you to write this article then about it by what you read?
Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say that Elon Musk is probably one of the most important people on planet Earth right now. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, his wealth and influence and power and innovation, kind of put him at the top of people's minds. And so I wanted to read Isaacson's biography. He did one for Steve Jobs, and just kind of know the story behind Elon Musk. And, well, what's interesting about Musk is beyond just like, okay, what are the things that help him become successful? Is he representative of something larger in our world? And
yeah.
To me, I found that his life, the way it kind of works and his beliefs and his take on things, reminded me a lot of Gen Xers. So people that are like my older brothers or people who are in their late 40s, 50s, early 60s, that generation that kind of came of age during the 80s and late 70s.
Okay. Where do you see the commonalities? Like what is it that he exemplifies that you say, yep, that's that generation?
Well, I think there's a certain libertarian spirit.
Okay.
You know, and I'm generalizing here, and Gen
sure.
Xers can correct me at any time, you know, but just my observation has been that there is a libertarian attitude with Gen Xers. They do it themselves. They, you know, and there's a workaholism, I mean, a dedication to work, and kind of grinding things out. But there's also levity, you know. I mean, Gen Xers have funny things. Like if you watch The Simpsons, it's a very Gen X kind of humor.
Okay.
And so, I mean, they're just kind of certain intangible qualities like that. His family situation seemed to mirror a lot of Gen Xers who grew up in broken homes or divorce, and, you know, the latchkey generation.
Sure. Yeah.
So these types of things, I think, kind of put them in a certain context.
Yeah.
And I think that, well, the funny part, at least to me, I think is pretty amusing, is the conflicts that he has with people right below him. So he's a Gen Xer. He's coming at things with a lot of intensity. He's very blunt.
Yeah.
And critical. I mean, Gen Xers are grouchy too. I'm going to put that out there. And millennials. And he's doing this with millennials. So the generation beneath him. So people that are maybe 10 years younger than him, or, you know, even 20 years younger than him, who are a lot much more sensitive, much more emphasis on, and who grew up kind of like in bubbles and kind of self-esteem culture.
Right.
So Gen X kind of missed that whole cutoff. And so the communication and the interaction between Gen X and the millennials, who are now like running companies and, you know, running the world.
Right.
There's a lot to learn from it. And there's a lot to identify with when you read the book.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of amazing because as I was looking, because I knew nothing about, his past or his growing up or anything like that. So it is amazing because you wonder the things he's doing, right? Self-driving cars, neurotransmitters, high-functioning androids, building rockets, all that kind of stuff. I always wonder, what are the underlying principles for this stuff? Like, does he see things as, I want to make humanity better? Or does he view it in different ways as to why he's doing all this stuff?
Well, and my take is my take. I need to put that out there. I mean,
sure.
My article got some praise and it got some criticism. Mm-hmm. People were not appreciating that. They felt like I was condemning Musk and judging him and, psychoanalyzing him.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on the biography and based on the details of his life, he seems to be primarily motivated by kind of an abstract love for humanity and progress, right?
Okay.
He's been primarily inspired by science fiction literature.
Oh.
And, so he wants to make human beings a seafaring, species. He wants to, he is okay with transhumanism, trying to enhance humanity with artificial enhancements, both mental and physical and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes, I wouldn't even say he's pro-life, he's pro-natalist. He believes in propagating the species. So he sees the things in terms of kind of an impersonal vision of progress, of technological progress. And so, of course, electric cars fit into that.
Right.
Spaceships that you can reuse and that, are better quality are part of that. Neurotransmitters are part of that. Mm-hmm. Robots and, self-driving cars are part of that. So there's nothing spiritual about it.
Yeah.
It's not really within a religious tradition.
Yeah.
It really is kind of a almost New Agey utopian kind of imagination. I mean, and what's funny is that it's not just him.
Mm-hmm.
Elon Musk was inspired by, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and some other books like that.
Right.
Bezos is the same way. I think Bill Gates is the same way.
Right.
All of them were inspired by a work of science fiction of just what's possible, even though we look at that as entertainment, almost escapism,
right?
For people like Musk, they take it to heart and they're like, well, let's make this happen.
Right.
Which is both pretty cool, but then you're like, really?
Yeah.
Exactly. Is that really it?
Yeah.
Well,
guess the other thing, Goose, I'm kind of confused that why does he support having a lot of kids? I mean, I don't really grasp from him a concept of family. So I'm not real sure what that's about. Did that come out in the in the book about him?
Well, he's been more vocal about it in recent years.
Okay.
Right after the book kind of came out. But no, even in the book, he himself, practiced what he preaches and has three different moms of his children.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses IVF for all of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
So, and you think about it, though. It makes sense because he is pronatalist.
Right.
He believes in, he just doesn't like declining birth rates. He wants humanity to have a future. The future is in having lots of children. And in the West and in the Far East, you mm-hmm. have declining birth rates.
Right, right.
So I think for him, it's just kind of a numbers thing.
Okay.
And, of course, he has dreams about colonizing Mars.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe other planets. So, and again, they're not just far off dreams to him. He wants to make it real. This is his mantra.
Right, right.
It's not exactly family. It's just children. It's just numbers. It's
right.
Offspring.
Well, one of the things you quote in here, and I wanted to your take on exactly what is he talking about here. A quote that you lifted here is that he says, "I'd be careful what you wish for. I'm not sure how many people would actually like to be me. The amount of I torture myself is next level, frankly." What does he mean by that, the amount he tortures himself?
So, yeah, I think what was interesting is that Elon Musk is incredibly volatile emotionally. And again, that's not me judging him. This is just what the book
what
will
it
show.
Is. Okay.
He had a very tough childhood with a father who emotionally traumatized him. He got beaten up by bullies and stuff growing up in South Africa. So, I mean, there's all that. But, I mean, even just his approach to work is intense, almost obsessive and manic. He'll just camp out at his company and do a surge so he can meet some insane deadline that he sets for himself. So, you know, he's addicted to that drama, that intensity, and he just won't sleep.
Right.
And he'll be incredibly depressed for periods at a time. His relationships are, you know, I mean, the fact that he's on three or four marriages and then girlfriends in between that, I mean, there's not a lot of stability. It's a very turbulent kind of lifestyle. And, you know, for me, I'm a normie. I'm a Catholic guy. I have my wife and I have my kids. to read about it, I mean, it's fascinating, but to even try to empathize, like, I get stressed out just reading about it.
Yeah.
It just sounds like he just pushes himself to the edge on numerous occasions. I don't think he's alone in that. I think there are a lot of people who throw themselves into their work, who make these things their identity, and they lose balance. They just kind of, and they engage in destructive behavior, we'd say.
Right.
So that's why I'd say, yeah, the dude has billions. He's the richest man in the world. He's one of the most famous men in the world. But, you know, what he does to himself to get to this point, I mean, it's not something normal human beings can really take and survive,
now,
really.
Do the people that work for him, like, are they like him? I mean, do you have to kind of be like him in order to work for him?
Yeah. No, I mean, so he commands that attention. I compare him to, like, an Ayn Rand protagonist.
Okay.
So if you read The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged or Anthem, you know, you have these great men. They're always men.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes women, but mostly men. And they're brilliant, and they're dedicated to their work, and they're just, like, moving and shaking society, pushing it forward, and you just can't help but, like, admire them. They just they seem to transcend the normal limitations of human beings. I think Elon Musk kind of has that issue, you know, has that aura as well. And there's this whole thing about boredom. Like, if they're not obsessing and, you know, focused on work and drinking Red Bulls left and right, then they're bored.
Yeah. Cause
so it's really workaholism at its core.
Yeah. Cause you mentioned the guy who left and, you know, and because he was burned out, left Tesla because he was burned out. And then he comes back because he was bored at his other job. He said,
I'm not sure how relatable that, I mean, I think it appeals to a certain kind of person. If you have nothing else in your life, or you have, you know, things in your life, and you're prioritizing the one thing, this is what happens. So yeah, he has his inner circle. He, you know, this is kind of what happened in Twitter when he took over.
Yeah,
he just fired everybody. I mean, almost everybody.
Yeah,
and he just got his insiders who thought like him, worked like him, and. You know, they were just a skeleton crew that was operating something that required a whole lot more people, but they were just so bunkered in and devoted to it that they were able to do it. But again, you know, you have to question, how sustainable is it? Is this a really good model? I won't say he needs to be more inclusive, he might need to be more inclusive.
Well, we are out of time. And thanks, Agus. This was a great conversation. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Uh-huh.